This is the UCLA Mindful Weekly Lecture. Each week, Diana Winston, or one of our UCLA Mindful teachers, offers a talk about mindfulness to deepen our understanding and cultivate well-being. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, well, I want to talk today about difficult emotions, and with an emphasis on a very particular difficult emotion, which is sadness or grief, or, well, we'll talk about all the different elements. But let me say, the next couple of weeks, I'm going to do some difficult emotions classes. And if you scroll back in our app, I did a lot of classes on anxiety, but I feel like it's easy. I often focus on anxiety and I sometimes miss some of the other hard ones. So if you think of, people say like the core emotions, and there's so many emotions, but core emotions are mad, sad, glad, and scared. So we're going to just be with, we're going to do sad today. And I think next week we're going to do mad. We'll see how it goes. Okay. So when I say sadness, I'm talking about grief. I'm talking about the blues. I'm talking about depression. I'm talking, and I'll distinguish what makes a depression. I'm talking about chronic unhappiness, complicated grief. There's so many different versions of that same core emotion. You know, there's many different ways it manifests. And sometimes there are these like adjacent emotions that are not exactly that emotion, but they're like kind of linked. For instance, loneliness. It's not the same emotion, but oftentimes the result of loneliness is feeling unhappy. And so I think you'll see there's like an interweaving of how we can work with these emotions. And I want to give the caveat, I'm not a therapist. As you know, I'm a mindfulness teacher. I have a lot of background with this stuff, so hopefully you'll keep that in mind as we talk. So sadness is a natural part of being human. There is absolutely nothing wrong with it. Much of our sadness is a completely appropriate response to conditions such as loneliness, something going on in life, loss, you know, looking at the world and feeling really sad. You read the news and you hear about something that's happening in a part of the world and it just makes you deeply sad. There's nothing wrong with sadness. In fact, it's an appropriate human response to things that tug at our heart. You know, and one of my teachers, some of you are familiar with Joanna Macy. Joanna Macy passed away just a couple of weeks ago, and she was a beautiful, beautiful teacher and mentor to so many people. And she always said, if you're grieving, it's because you love something so deeply, right? We grieve because we love, and there's like a beauty in seeing the love, but then the grief is often really hard. I mean, grief is hard. Sadness is hard. And one of the things that can be hard when we're dealing with grief, for instance, is that when we are told by the culture, and that could be by our job or by our friends and family or somebody, that we're not doing it right and we need to get over it. You know, like it's, oh, you're feeling sad, you should be over this by now. And then, okay, get back to work. You had a loss, now get back to work. Or, you know, a relationship ended. Well, you should be able to get it right. So it's important to acknowledge that these types of emotions, they have a kind of life of their own, and that in the best case scenario, there would be cultural like holding in place to allow us to deeply grieve, whether it's grieving, you know, a pet or a person or the loss of you know, something important to you, whatever that was, maybe like a job or something. Or you might be grieving just like, oh, my heart, like I said, my heart is breaking for what's happening in some part of the world or something. So we don't typically have really healthy ways of holding each other in grief. And there's a lot of I think that's part of the problem that happens, right? And this is speaking, with like a US centric voice, but I think it's other some maybe some other cultures handle it much better. Now, grief and sadness are not depression. So for instance, when you have grief, it tends to mix positive emotions too, right? So they're sorry, not positive emotions, positive memories. So like you're having grief and you're having positive memories because you're remembering something that you're grieving. And depression often is linked to low self-esteem. And so there's nothing. So when we're sad, and we're just sad, we might just be sad. We don't even know why we're sad. We just wake up one morning, I'm feeling sad. That happens to me sometimes. I'm just like, oh, there's a sadness in my heart. I don't even know what it is. Or sometimes it's really obvious. I'm sad and I know why I'm sad. I'm sad because I'm feeling really like scared about something. It's making me sad. Or sometimes, the sadness comes through us in waves, and sometimes sometimes it feels like it never wants to leave. And so when it becomes chronic or impairs our functionality, or when it's linked to low self-esteem, typically this is when it becomes depression. And so some of us struggle with this. So some of us, we get sad, it comes and goes. Some of us, we have like chronic sadness or chronic grief or depression. And depression is caused by a whole combination of biological, psychological, and social factors. So depression can vary from very mild to severe. And then it has all these different kinds of manifestations, which I'll say, and also know that as I say them, you might be having them when you're feeling sad and you're not depressed. So the typical thing of feeling depressed, people say is, oh, I'm feeling sad, or I have a depressed mood. But then there's all these other things like loss of interest or pleasure in activities that we once enjoyed, changes in appetite, trouble sleeping or sleeping too much, loss of energy, increased fatigue, feeling that's a big one. A lot of people, I've noticed that when I've worked with people or some of my friends who were dealing with grief, say with the loss of a person they loved, it wasn't like they felt sad, but they felt like just completely exhausted, like hit by a truck kind of exhaustion, or a feeling of like purposelessness. That can, depression can show up as a sense of like meaninglessness or purposelessness, inability to focus. That's a big one when people are sad. And they get confused because you think that depression or sadness, it's supposed to look like a certain thing. It's supposed to look like I'm sad, but it might look like I'm completely zero energy. And if I try to focus on even, three sentences of a book, I just can't do it. Right, that could be how it shows up. So I think it's important to so difficulty concentrating, difficulty making decisions, forgetting things, and then depression also has these qualities of feeling worthless or guilty. And of course, in the most extreme, it's things like suicidal ideation and so forth. But according to like the psychological manuals and such, the symptoms have to last at least 2 weeks for a diagnosis of depression. So if you have one of these or a little bit, it might just be you're going through some grief or sadness. And again, I really want to honor the appropriateness of it. It's when it impairs our functionality. That's when it's problematic. And whether you're going through situational grief, like the loss of someone or something important to you, or you are dealing with depression, many of us do, or it's a mild or maybe it's severe stuff, there are incredible things that we can use to work with it. And that's where the mindfulness piece comes in. But not only mindfulness, lots of things come in. So, a couple things more to understand about depression. Our depression, the one important thing is that our cognitions make a difference. Our cognitions make a difference. So, what this means is at the core often of depressive or extreme feelings is catastrophic beliefs and distorted thinking. So a catastrophic cat or catastrophizing belief would be like, hold on, just okay. A catastrophizing belief is like, I didn't get the job. I'm never going to find a job ever. I'm going to, die with no job and poor, like those are like those are catastrophizing. Or my child is sick. They're always going to be sick. There's nothing I can do about it. It's the end. Like those are catastrophizing beliefs. They go into worst case scenario. So that's one of the key components of how to work with a mind that has this distorted thinking. That's why what I'm going to talk about is going to draw a lot from like cognitive behavioral therapy, because depression and sadness really is linked to these cognitive distortions and beliefs that we're not seeing things clearly. And when we can use these tools to work with them, we get some freedom. So distorted thinking, what's that? That includes things like generalizing, like one situation making it root for everything, like everything. Catastrophizing actually is a kind of distorted thinking, predicting the future. This happened, so that means such and such is definitely going to happen. Black and white thinking, where people can't see any gray. And there's lots of lists. And if you were curious about it, look on the, you just like go on the internet and look up like what are forms of distorted thinking. You'll get like a huge long list. When I say that cognitions matter, the thing to think about is that depression is like, it's like a filter. It depression and sadness and all these forms, it's like you're putting it, like it filters the reality of the world. In other words, a fil when I say filter, I mean like a light filter, a color. It's like we put on depression eyeglasses and we can only see the world that way. So it's like instead of looking at the world, I'm looking out and everything looks just nice. It's a sunny day here. We put on the glasses and everything looks gray and gloomy. And it's like that's the way the mind is perceiving reality. So one of my friends who's done a lot of work on mindfulness and depression always calls it depressive propaganda, right? The goal. So it's like your mind is telling yourself these things that are making you see it through this filter, through this lens of yuck, this is terrible. So the goal is to recognize it and notice when it gets extreme, and notice when it's almost like the dep notice when the mind that is depressed is talking, and that it's not the reality of the world, but it's like this propaganda machine going, oh, everything is horrible. It's only going to stay horrible. I'll never get out of this. No one loves me. So, whatever the story is, it's like a propaganda machine in your mind. And really what my friend likes to emphasize is that the depressed mind lies a lot. It lies to you. It tells you that you're worthless. It tells you that there's no point in getting out of bed. It tells you that, there's nothing's ever going to work out. All these kinds of all these kinds of like this the, these dis, this cognitive distortions that are like this. I kind of like that image of like this propaganda that's in your mind. Okay, so that's just gives you a big picture look at these kinds of things. So what are the tools that we have for working with sadness and depression? And obviously I'm going to go to mindfulness-based ones, but I'm going to talk about some of the others. So one of the things is just to kind of notice the triggers and avoid the triggers and go to things that uplift and bring joy. So for each of us, if we struggle with this, what is going to trigger my grief or depression? And so it could be events, experiences, people, beliefs. It could be, the famous HALT, halt, don't be hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, right? There's a lot of things. Going to my high school reunion, that could trigger it. Going to a family reunion, that could trigger it. God, we all have our thing. So one thing is just like being sensible about what you impose on yourself. Looking at the news a lot often that triggers anxiety, but for some of us, it triggers grief, you know? And again, like I said, it's a beautiful way, you know, in this weird thing about like, it's because of our love. But at the same time, reading news and hearing about terrible things, and then it's heartbreaking, right? So we want to be sensitive with our system and take care, and so not put ourselves continuously or limit or titrate the what we put our what we feed into our body and mind. Okay. And then what do we do that uplifts? Like, okay, I'm a person who tends towards being depressed or sad, so I know one thing that really supports me is I live alone, let's say, and so I have to see people at least 3 times a week or whatever it is. But what is going to support you? And to put those things and be really rigorous about those triggers. So supporting, preventing the negative triggers and supporting the positive. So that's just one kind of like, you know, overarching thing. And of course, that means getting enough sleep. But as I mentioned, sometimes when you're really depressed, you cannot sleep. So it's problematic, right? And also, like, eating well is a good thing. But oftentimes, when we're feeling really sad, all we want to do is eat cookies. And so that doesn't, so it's, we got to be gentle with ourselves and doing the best we can. So the second thing that's, so the first is like awareness of these triggers. The second thing is what we think of as cognitive reframes. And this is where something like cognitive behavioral therapy comes in. And some of you may have done it, you're very familiar with it. I'm not an expert on it. I know kind of the basics of it, but it's one of the most effective treatments for depression. And I'm going to link it to mindfulness in a minute. So what it is, if you're unfamiliar, it's a structured short-term psychotherapy that helps people identify and change unhelpful thought patterns and behaviors that contribute to emotional distress. So it teaches a lot of practical skills for managing problems and thoughts and for reducing symptoms and gives like new, healthier modes of thinking and coping. That's kind of the basics of cognitive behavioral therapy. And there's a lot of great research behind it and why it's helpful, because what you start to do with it is identify the negative thought patterns and identify when they've become distorted, challenge and reframe those unhelpful thoughts. I'm going to talk about this from a mindfulness perspective in a minute, but practice behavioral strategies that focus on the first thing I talk about, right? To reduce exposure and build positive experiences. And it has problem-solving skills, relaxation skills. There's a lot that's in a typical CBT treatment, which I think is 8 weeks. And, you know, it's something that is pretty invaluable for a lot of people. Now, okay, sorry, there's two directions I want to go here. I'm just trying to figure out which is the best. There is something called mindfulness-based cognitive therapy. I'm going to talk about that in a minute, but let's talk about how we work with the distorted thinking, and because it's very linked to mindfulness, because mindfulness can help us recognize when we have distorted thinking, and then we can notice, like, oh, I'm lost in catastrophizing, I'm lost in globalizing, I'm lost in black and white thinking. We can label that. And when we are aware of that, we can draw from this kind of work, but you've heard me talk about this many times, unless you're new, which is what I call enlisting the wisdom mind. Enlisting the wisdom mind is inviting the wise part of ourselves to help us with the so-called like neurotic part of ourselves, if you want to call it that, like the part of us that's going, oh, no one's ever going to like me. I'm not going to have any friends ever, you know. And then another voice, the wisdom mind, might say, well, is that true? Is that really true? How do you know that to be true? And it's like we have the, I mean, you can think of it in different ways. Like there's a child inside us, and then we have a wise adult, or you can have just like the unwise and the wise, or, you know, we can think, we, as we meditate and we get develop more wisdom, we have more access to the wisdom mind. And one of the things that happens when we're depressed and we don't have mindfulness is we're sunk in it, right? It's like the water we're swimming in, we simply cannot see it. I'm having these thoughts and they feel really real to me, and that's just the way it is. So back in the day, we would always tell students, don't believe everything you think, right? That wonderful bumper sticker, which I have, oh, in my other office, hanging on my wall, don't believe everything you think, because especially not the thoughts that send us into depressive motion, right? Because those thoughts, they're distortions. So with mindfulness, there's like being in the thought, and I'm totally lost. But with mindfulness, we might go like, oh wait, that was depressive propaganda. Aha. And you notice it, and then you can, or do you even just feel like, oh, you even just identify it, depressed thinking. And then you can recognize it, and then you can use some creative wisdom to do it. So what might you do? Things like ask yourself, has this happened yet? Do I know it will happen? Right? It's like investigating, questioning yourself is one way. How can I absolutely know it's true? Is this true? Is this thought realistic? Am I basing my thought on facts or feelings? What is the evidence for this thought? So, what this is doing is inviting us to be aware enough that we're having these thoughts that we can then have the wise part, even if it's just like a fingernail of awareness, and go like, oh wait, do I really know this to be true? Is that really going to happen? How do I know? Am I viewing this situation as black and white, or is it more complicated? What part of what I'm thinking is true, and what part of it is a guess that I can't really know? What are the other choices? So there, I'm going to, for those of us who are here in the room right now, I'm going to just give you my list so you can have it. I'm going to put it in the chat. There's a few more I want to talk about. Hold on. It's a little funky in the, I'm not sure why, but it's all messed up with the formatting, but you'll get the idea. Oh, it's telling me that I'm putting too many words. So let me get rid of it. A few. Hold on, give me a second. I'll just get rid of the bottom. Okay. So these are some, I'm just putting in the chat. Has it happened yet? Do I know it will happen in this? Oh, this is one I didn't say, but another version of asking questions from the wisdom mind is, in this moment, am I okay? Right? Like it might be that the worry or the grief is about something that's going to happen, but how am I in this moment? And just asking that question could be useful. Or, can I make it through this hour, this day, this minute, something like that, right? So it's helping us refocus from this like vague, worrisome, grief, horrible future to what is happening right here and now. Other ways of using this, of other ways of, so that's one way. It's kind of questioning is one thing that you can enlist the wisdom mind with. And the second thing is soothing. So soothing might be saying things to yourself like this, like, it's okay. I'll get through this. It's not the worst thing in the world. I've gotten through things before. This too shall pass, right? These are all kinds of things that we can say. And you probably do a lot of this on your own spontaneously, but when it becomes like a deliberate thing, like, I am dealing with a time of, say you're saying to this to yourself, there's a lot of sadness in my life right now. I am going to amp up my awareness of the difficult thought and my access to my wisdom mind the best I can. So these are some ways of playing with. So one way is questioning, and the other way is soothing. Okay, I'm just typing a few things in. Sorry. All right. So that's an important piece of how we bring both the wisdom of the cognitive behavioral therapy and the and mindfulness together in my mind. And then mindfulness itself is incredibly helpful for working with the distorted thinking. And here's why. It helps you identify your thoughts and patterns. And because we are identifying them, we get to work with them on the spot to avoid what I like to think of as the snowball. The snowball is you have a little piece of snow, and then it picks up and it picks up and it picks up. And the next thing you know, you have a giant snowball of sadness and grief and depression and or whatever the difficult emotion is. But if you had noticed it when it was a tiny bit of snow, it won't turn into the giant snowball. So I try to invite people to practice noticing it as quickly as possible so you avoid it snowballing. Okay, so that's the first way that mindfulness is helpful in this respect. And I was kind of already saying this. Another way mindfulness is helpful when we're depressed is it can return us to the present moment. I mean, this is fairly obvious, but if everything that's happening is in the future or worrying about the past or remorse or replaying it, why did I do that? Why did I say that? I should have done this differently. Mindfulness says, come back here, take a breath, feel your body, be present, right? And it can pull us out of these things. Now, of course, sometimes those thoughts are massively compelling. And we don't want to get pulled back into the present moment, but sometimes we can. And sometimes we can just have a moment. And it doesn't have to be in our body that we come back to. It could be looking out the window and seeing a beautiful sky or something that we come back to, whatever it is that's in the present moment that's not in these cognitive distortions and difficult thinking. Mindfulness helps us shift from the narrative to the experiential self. So there's a bunch of research that came out a number of years ago on the way the mind, there are different modes in the mind that we can be in the narrative self versus the experiential self. The narrative self is the part of the mind that's making up stories and thinking, and I'm not good enough. And it's like telling stories about the experience. Versus the experiential self, which is the part of in the brain. I mean, and they're like identifying these parts of the brain that is connected to the direct experience of this present moment. And so the idea is if we can learn to shift when we're lost in the narrative self into the experiential self. And so, or when we're lost like in critical thoughts into more present time awareness. And that's kind of like an interesting framing of it. There's research showing that when people learn that, it actually alters the neural expression of sadness. So there's research behind it, and I just like that. I like the kind of way of talking about it. And then another reason that mindfulness is helpful is it. And this is something I haven't even gone into at all, but I've talked about it many times over the years, is how it helps us to be present with emotions as they're arising. We learn to hold our emotions, whatever they are, with awareness and compassion. And this is like one of the, I would say, the best. It's not the best part of mindfulness, but it's one of the best tools that mindfulness can offer us, is that skill set for how do we meet what is happening with kindness? How do we in the midst? So some of you are familiar with the RAIN acronym, which I'm not going to do today. We've done it a number of times, but I'll just remind you, it's recognize. What am I experiencing right now? Oh, there's sadness, there's grief, or there's anger, or there's fear, or there's, whatever it is. A is allow. Can I allow it to be here? From the perspective of mindfulness, whatever it is we're feeling is okay. And then the I is investigate. What do I notice in my body and mind? My heart's racing, my stomach's clenched, my jaw is tight. I'm having these thoughts that I'm never going to get better. It's never going to end. Oh, okay. I'm aware. I'm aware. I'm aware. Right. And then the N is two things, non-identify, which means not take so personally. This goes back to don't believe everything you think, the bumper sticker. You begin to have a little space. And then the other part of N is nurture, bring some kindness to ourselves. Now I know I went through that really fast, and because the reason I went through it fast is because I've done whole classes on that, but I can come back to it if people are still wanting more depth with it. But just to say that it's one of the beautiful, beautiful aspects of mindfulness. All of these things that I'm saying, right? It helps us identify what we're thinking. It helps us come back into the present moment, and it helps us be present with a difficult emotion. So that what happens when we're grieving and we bring mindfulness into it is not necessarily that the emotion goes away. We can mindfully grieve. And what does that mean? It means that we can hold ourselves with compassion as we feel the sad emotions, as we cry, as we notice our face and our heart and the heaviness and as we notice the feelings and thoughts that arise, that we can have a container that's big enough to hold these emotions so that they become like weather patterns passing through us. We've talked about that in the past, but it's like it's moving through us. And this is like the incredible nature of mindfulness. So sometimes we're mindful of a difficult thought and the thought goes away. Sometimes we're mindful of a difficult emotion and the emotion goes away. But that sometimes that doesn't happen, yet we are able to be present and loving with ourselves while we're having that. And I've had that, I don't know, countless times in my life. And students have shared with me how many times they've been able to do that once they get kind of the hang of it. So I'm going to come back to that in a moment, but I just want to mention that there is something called mindfulness-based cognitive therapy. So I was talking about cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, and then there's MBCT, mindfulness-based cognitive therapy. And I was trying to look at the research to say, like, which one is better? And guess what the answer is? Which one do you think is better? Mindfulness, MBCT, mindfulness-based cognitive therapy, or just plain cognitive therapy? Come on, you can guess. Anyone willing to guess? All right, you're not guessing. So I'll just tell you. All right, everyone's guessing mindfulness because you would think, since we're in the mindfulness class, guess what the answer is? Neither. Sorry. The answer is neither. It's not exactly that clear. They're both good, is what I'm saying. There's more of a longer evidence base. Like there've been more research studies around CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, and it's usually like the first line that people use for acute depression. But there is one place where so the answer is yes, both are the best. MBCT, mindfulness-based cognitive therapy, actually shines around preventing depressive relapse. So that's with people who have recurrent depression, and so there is there's a bunch of good research showing that it can prevent future depression. So essentially, they're both fantastic. And the thing is, some people are more drawn to one than the other. The MBCT one, I mean, I don't know if I'm saying this correctly, so I don't want to steer you wrong, but I think it just has a little bit more of a gentler feel in my mind. But if someone knows CBT and they think that's incorrect, but it's just like, the emotions, it's fine to have them. We're not trying to change them or distort them or, see them and nail them right away. Oh no, that's that. Change the behavior, have a new solution. It's also allow, like, there's an allowing of it. Like, okay, this is what the mind is doing. So just to kind of complete my thoughts on mindfulness of, they're both great tools, and different people are drawn to different things. I think that's what the research comes down to in the end. So ultimately, there's a lot of very useful tools that we have through mindfulness and through and there's plenty of other things that I'm not mentioning, of course, like therapy and there's countless other ways that people approach working with a heavy heart and depressive symptoms. And mindfulness has this beautiful offering in the way it helps us work with our both being with present with the experience in the moment and also working to enlist the wisdom mind by recognizing that the depressive thought is there and recognizing this cognition, the depressive cognitions that are so powerful and painful. So it's beautiful. And the last thing I'll say is that, of course, and then medication. I didn't even mention medication. And of course, anything that I'm teaching will never supersede whatever else you're doing, like therapy, medication, or other approaches. But the last thing I'll say is one of the things I love about the mindful approach to working with a grieving heart and mind is that we can be really gentle. We can go really slowly. We can find the places in our bodies that feel resourced and safe. Like you've been doing that work with when Banu has come, and then Aaron was there last week and teaching us how to find strength and resource and ease in our bodies so that we can handle these difficult emotions as they come. And we don't have to do it all at once. We can be very gentle. And obviously, please, you know, if I'm giving this talk and you're thinking, oh, I need help, seek help as needed, of course. So we can bring love and compassion to ourselves and live, even if we're dealing with difficult cognitive distortions, and that we can find that place of ease and well-being, and a place that is sort of like a deeper sense of well-being, even when the thoughts are very, very challenging. Okay, so I'm going to pause for a minute and see if you have any questions about anything I said today. Or thoughts. And you're welcome to either type it into the chat or come on camera with anything. Someone wrote earlier, mindfulness is a valuable tool, but your positive thinking is the foundation of the structure. Don't think your problem is the end of the world. Rationalize your search for solutions. I mean, it's definitely an approach, is to remind ourselves to kind of move towards the positive thinking. And for some people, when the depression is so overwhelming, it's really hard to do. So we want to give multiple options of what people can do. Someone wrote, it seems like our culture is very much against the idea that sadness and anxiety exist and are normal at times. I would agree. I would agree. Like, we're supposed to be happy. What's wrong with you if you're not happy? And the fact is, most people are not. You know, not happy. Like, if you look statistically, there's tremendous levels of depression and anxiety, and yet, like, there's something wrong with that. And I think that in the certainly in like the culture that I live in, which is this dominant US culture, it is, yeah, it's like it's there's something wrong with you if you are sad. There is something wrong with you if you are anxious, and there is nothing wrong with you. And like I said at the very beginning, oftentimes these are extremely appropriate responses to situations in your life or in the world. So the goal then is to not, because so like let's say we're having a difficult emotion and then we have a judgment that we've internalized from society, I shouldn't be having this emotion. That like doubles down and makes it harder. So if we can let go of that assumption that we're not supposed to have it, that it just is what is happening, and then we can work with it more skillfully, I think. How do we help people around us with sadness and depression, or should we even try? You know, I mean, obviously it depends. It's like, if is it your kid? Is it your spouse? Is it your friend? I mean, it's hard. It's a hard thing to answer in the sense that it depends how willing and open people are, you know, and My recommendation definitely is not to proselytize and, oh, you're depressed. You need to be practicing mindfulness. Do that. And here's the UCLA Mindful app and practice every day and it'll go away. Like, that is definitely not skillful. So please don't do that. But first, when you're talking to them and seeing, do they want help? And then, if so, what kind of help? Do they want resources? Do they want you to help them find someone to talk to, or a physician, or a mental health practitioner? Do they want, are they interested in mindfulness? Are they, you know, it's like, I think we have to be really careful as we approach people and then, and really be partners with them rather than telling them what we think they should do. And then also managing our own pain, because sometimes what happens is, we see someone we love suffering and we want to fix it so we don't have to suffer ourselves. You know that one? So managing your own, being with yourself, being kind, practicing kindness and compassion. I didn't even talk that much actually when I gave the talk about kindness and compassion, which are also beautiful tools when we're suffering to practice kindness and compassion for ourselves and even compassion for others. So sometimes when we're suffering, practicing compassion for others can help with our own suffering because it takes us out of it. So those are just some little pieces around it. You mentioned to avoid triggers for grief, but what if the trigger is one of your coworkers giving you support for for the passing of your dad when you're trying not to think about his passing while at work? I'm sorry, that sounds really hard. I think that is it just, it needs a clear communication, and maybe it might be through an email would be easier, or a text or something. Like, I would say something like, I know that you care about me and want to support me, but actually the most supportive thing you could do right now is to not ask me anything. I really can't be thinking about it at work. Just being straight and transparent and clear and seeing if they can receive that. There's fMRI evidence that grief and depression are different. How do you put sadness into this? I know it's, yes, grief and depression are different. I don't know about the fMRI studies, but that makes sense to me. Yeah, so depression, as I said, is like, is when it's has all the, I remember I gave you like kind of a whole list of qualities and stuff, and then, or symptoms. And then grief is different. And then grief, if you have grief, grief might just be a response to, you know, someone you lost something important. And that's not depression. But then your question is sadness. So sadness, I think, is just like the raw emotion. So when we are grieving, we feel sad. When we are depressed, we might be feeling sad. We might be feeling other things too. So they're different. I think sadness is just like the baseline raw emotion. I feel like as I notice my thoughts, care for them and for myself, often taking some action towards resolving an issue is qu quiet helpful in my sense of wholeness and confidence. Yes, I mean, that's the promise of this, that we bring a loving heart to what we're experiencing and really giving ourselves care. And then sometimes you're right, sometimes action is needed. I mean, we didn't talk about action, but sometimes there is action that's needed. And then that can really build what you're saying, this sense of wholeness and confidence. Are there specific mindfulness practices geared toward dealing with, geared to dealing with sadness? I think I have some meditations on sadness. So it would, so it's, I don't think it's any different than any of the other emotions, but oh, difficult emotions. So I have meditations on working with difficult emotions, working, you know, like all of those would help. But there may be some, I'll have to look. Maybe Serena can look while I'm doing this if I have, if I've done any for only sadness or depression. And there used to be a good resource, which I don't know if it still exists anymore. I'm gonna give me 2 seconds and I'm gonna look it up. And see if it still exists. Hold on. Ended up with a PDF rather than like a specific practice. All right, I'll look for it. I'll look for it and give it to you next week if I can find it. So someone wrote, mindfulness has really helped me deal with depressive episodes. I still have them, but I know they will end, and that helps so much. This is beautiful. Mindfulness provides space and understanding. It shrinks the sadness to a manageable size. Thank you for sharing that. And that's really part of the promise of this, that we really can use it to work with it. I feel as if I should be able to separate my personal life issues from what happens in the greater world. How can I look at my life in a way that makes sense? Sandy, I'm not sure I completely understand your question. Maybe you can either write a little bit more and I'll come back to it. So I'm going to just keep going and then feel free to add more, or you can, if you want to come on camera. Public stigma against mental health issues is the core of my sadness. How can we cope with this? Mindfulness is helpful to overcome my personal stigma. Yeah, this is what we were talking about earlier. I mean, you look at the statistics and you see, I don't have them off the top of my head, but you see how many people are struggling with anxiety and depression. And of course, that's increased significantly since the pandemic. And it's also really infiltrated adolescence, right? It's huge. So I think it's just part of like slow cultural change to go like this is reality, and that it's not. It shouldn't be stigmatized. It should be like, yeah, we're all dealing with this to a certain degree. So I think the starting point is in the RAIN acronym, recognize the second, the A is allow. And allow is from the perspective of mindfulness, anything we're feeling is okay and normal. There is nothing wrong with what we're feeling. And that, if this for you is a particular area of suffering, to really spend a lot of time with the allowing and letting it be and noticing the voices that come up and say, you shouldn't be feeling this, or there's something wrong with you, or our world tells us I shouldn't be feeling this. And just having them back down and keep going to that part of you that's like, no, we all experience this. And it's
It's
okay,
okay.
totally allowed to feel it. Do I have a list of good cognitive behavioral therapists? Unfortunately, I do not. Sorry. As you, but I'm sure if you go to online, I'm sure there's a lot of like if you go into like Psychology Today, you'll see who specializes in CBT. As you age, many people you know are sick and even dying, and so it's difficult to be in this culture in which you must always be optimistic and positive. Hang on 1 second. My daughter's trying to cut through to me, but I'm just responding to her. Okay. So let me repeat that because it's important. As you age, many people you know are sick and even dying. And so it's difficult to be in this culture in which you must always be positive and optimistic. Yeah. So this is what someone else was asking before. It's like it's stigmatized. And yeah, as you age, I mean, this year, four teachers that I know died this year, right? Just four people whom I respect and love in my like mindfulness and also in the Buddhist world lineage died this year. And that's just the nature of life. And then people are like, be happy, everything's good. It's not. And so I think the cultural change is slow. And I think probably one of the best things just to say in response to that question or thought or comment is finding community with people who see eye to eye with you, who are willing to like really look sickness and old age and death right in the eye and go, yes, this is a reality. This is life. There is nothing wrong with that. There is no, my response to it, there is nothing wrong with that. How can we support each other in this deeper understanding of these challenging things? I love the child and loving parent for accessing my inner wisdom as a practice. I have done that to some degree. Is there more you can mention about using that technique? Perhaps just doing that is enough. Okay, hold on. Let me just look through the thing. Oh, okay. So I'm gonna, because we're coming to the end, so I'm gonna try to do things fast. So there's a lot of ways you can play with it. Sometimes it's just the image of it, like the part of me that's really reactive, and then you might have a sense of the part of you that's wise or loving coming in. And it could be that you have an image that you see it, like you see yourself tantruming as a child, and you imagine a loving part of you coming in. It could be that you use touch. We did touch in the meditation practice. So a hug or a hold or a touch, and imagining that touch is coming from a wise, loving elder or caretaker. Now, many of us did not have parents who were loving, so don't pick your parent if they weren't loving. But there might be someone who, even if it's not an actual person, it could be just like a feeling, a sense, and knowing of it. So bringing that in, I can talk about, you know what I'm thinking, I'll talk about this more down the road, because it's a great technique, and there's a lot I can say, and we're running out of time. People are asking just a general meditation question, so I'm not sure I'm going to get to that. Serena put in some things. I have a meditation called Working with Sadness and Grief, and she's also put in RAIN, Working with Difficult Emotions. Oh, and I had asked. Oh, Serena also put in Psychology Today for finding a therapist near you. I get down on myself, just because I asked Sandy for clarification. I get down on myself that I feel so influenced by things I'm not directly involved with, that I should keep the focus on my own business. But I do feel quite influenced. Yeah, and it is normal that we are influenced. And so I would be curious to why being influenced by outside matters is a problem, right? It's like, we all get influenced by outside things. So first of all, kindness and acceptance of yourself that you do it. And then when you notice yourself doing it, if it's something you want to change, not changing out of there's something wrong with me, but changing out of how can I make a loving and different choice? And just using your mindfulness to redirect and move in that direction. There's a lot to say here, and I know that there's more. I don't, is there a, is someone that wanted to paste, copy and paste the chat? I don't think we can because it's a UCLA thing. And I see there's a bunch that I didn't get to, and I'm so sorry. If there's something that came from this talk, and that's really important that you want access to, just send an email to the office, and maybe Serena can save the chat and can send it out if for people who want it. Okay. Sorry, Serena, more work for you, but I think it was important today and helpful. So I'm going to do a closing meditation in a moment. I just want to make a few announcements. I'm going to move next week. There'll be more discussion of difficult emotion, but we'll do anger, and anger and sadness are actually very closely linked in certain ways. So we'll move on to that. Serena is kindly putting in her email, the office email. Couple of upcoming events. There's still room in our retreat in Big Bear, which is outside of Los Angeles, 2 hours, 2.5 hours up in the mountains. So that's coming up in about a month. And I'm very excited to teach that. It's an opportunity to go deep dive. And there is a lot of financial support if people are looking for that. And it's going to be interesting, at like a great way to deeply dive into your practice. And then I'm teaching a course starting September 9th on what I call the spectrum of awareness practices for particular different ways to be mindful, from very focused to wide open, spacious, relaxed mindfulness. And you'll learn a lot about how to meditate by doing this course. So the retreat is September 29th through October 5th, 6th, and one of those. And the other course starts on the 9th, and We're getting them in the chat for, as links that you can click on. Okay, so let's take, oh, and we're going to be doing more courses with ADHD for people who that is an issue for them. So just stay tuned because we haven't yet published that when that's going to be. So let's just take a moment to take a breath together. There's a lot to say. There's a lot that gets stirred up when we start talking about important things like this, and just to notice how you're feeling. Letting yourself be exactly where you are. And offering some kindness to yourself. Maybe you're someone who is struggling with depression. There's so many of us. Or you're grieving right now. There's so many of us. Or you know someone or someone you love is depressed or grieving or sad. Let's offer some kindness out to all of us who struggle. You are not alone. We're in this together. And breathe, sending it out widely. May everyone everywhere, may they open to the heart of compassion. May their suffering be eased. May we all find joy and happiness and freedom. Okay, thank you, everybody. We will end our meditation and I'll see you next week. And thanks for your attention.
Thanks for listening to the UCLA Mindful Weekly Lecture. For more information about our classes, workshops, and retreats, please visit uclahealth.org/UCLA Mindful. Join us each week for a new session on mindfulness.